The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. Chapter 38. Making them pens was a distressed tough job, and so was the saw, and Jim allowed the inscription was going to be the toughest of all. That's the one which the prisoner has to scrabble on the wall. But he had to have it. Tom said he'd got to. There weren't no case of a state prisoner not scrabbling his inscription to leave behind, and his coat of arms. "Look at Lady Jane Grey," he says. "Look at Guilford Dudley. Look at old Northumberland. Why, Huck, suppose it is considerable trouble. What you going to do? How you going to get around it? Jim's got to do his inscription and coat of arms. They all do." Jim says, "Why, Mars Tom, I hain't got no coat of arms. I hain't got nothing but dish yer old shirt, and you knows I got to keep dat journal on dat." "Oh, you don't understand, Jim. A coat of arms is very different." "Well," I says, "Jim's right anyway when he says he ain't got no coat of arms, because he hain't." "I reckon I knowed that," Tom says. "But you bet he'll have one before he goes out of this, because he's going out right, and there ain't going to be no flaws in his record." So whilst me and Jim filed away at the pens on a brickbat apiece, Jim a-making his'n out of the brass, and I making mine out of the spoon, Tom set to work to think out the coat of arms. By and by he said he'd struck so many good ones he didn't hardly know which to take, but there was one which he reckoned he'd decide on. He says, "On the scutcheon we'll have a bend, or in the dexter base, a saltire Murray in the fess with a dog, couchant for common charge, and under his foot a chain embattled for slavery with a chevron vert in a chief engrailed, and three invected lines on a field azure with the nombril points rampant on a dancette indented, crest a runaway nigger, sable with his bundle over his shoulder on a bar sinister, and a couple of gules for supporters, which is you and me. Motto, majori freda, minori auto. Got it out of a book. Means the more haste, the less speed." "Gee willikins," I says, "but what does the rest of it mean?" "We ain't got no time to bother over that," he says. "We got to dig in like all get out." "Well, anyway," I says, "what's some of it? What's a fess?" "A fess? A fess is... you don't need to know what a fess is. I'll show him how to make it when he gets to it." "Shucks, Tom," I says, "I think you might tell a person. What's a bar sinister?" "Oh, I don't know, but he's got to have it. All the nobility does." That was just his way. If it didn't suit him to explain a thing to you, he wouldn't do it. You might pump at him a week, it wouldn't make no difference. He's got all that coat of arms business fixed, so now he started in to finish up the rest of that part of the work, which was to plan out a mournful inscription, said Jim got to have one, like they all done. He made up a lot and wrote them out on a paper and read them off, so. 1. Here a captive heart busted. 2. Here a poor prisoner, forsook by the world and friends, fretted his sorrowful life. 3. Here a lonely heart broke, and a worn spirit went to its rest, after 37 years of solitary captivity. 4. Here, homeless and friendless, after 37 years of bitter captivity, perished a noble stranger, natural son of Louis XIV. Tom's voice trembled whilst he was reading them, and he most broke down. When he got done, he couldn't no way make up his mind which one for Jim to scrabble onto the wall. They was all so good. But at last he allowed he would let him scrabble them all on. Jim said it would take him a year to scrabble such a lot of truck onto the logs with a nail, and he didn't know how to make letters besides. But Tom said he would block them out for him, and then he wouldn't have nothing to do but just follow the lines. Then, pretty soon, he says, "Come to think, the logs ain't a-goin' to do. They don't have log walls in a dungeon. We got to dig the inscriptions into a rock. We'll fetch a rock." Jim said the rock was worse than the logs. He said it would take him such a pison long time to dig them into a rock, he wouldn't ever get out. But Tom said he would let me help him do it. Then he took a look to see how me and Jim was getting along with the pens. It was most pesky, tedious hard work and slow, and didn't give my hands no show to get well of the sores, and we didn't seem to make no headway hardly. So Tom says, "I know how to fix it. We got to have a rock for the coat of arms and mournful inscriptions, and we can kill two birds with that same rock. There's a gaudy big grindstone down at the mill, and we'll smooch it and carve the things on it and file out the pens and the saw on it, too. It weren't no slouch of an idea, and it weren't no slouch of a grindstone, nuther, but we allowed we'd tackle it. It weren't quite midnight yet, so we cleared out for the mill, leaving Jim at work. We smouched the grindstone and set out to roll her home, but it was a most nation-tough job. Sometimes, do what we couldn't keep her from falling over, and she might come mighty near mashing us every time. Tom said she was going to get one of us sure before we got through. We got her halfway, and then we was plumb played out and most drowned with sweat. We see it weren't no use. We got to go and fetch Jim, so he raised up his bed and slid the chain off of the bed leg and wrapped it round and round his neck, and we crawled out through our hole and down there, and Jim and me laid into that grindstone and walked her along like nothing, and Tom superintended. He could out-superintend any boy I ever see. He knowed how to do everything. Our hole was pretty big, but it weren't big enough to get the grindstone through. But Jim, he took the pick and soon made it big enough. Then Tom marked out them things on it with a nail and set Jim to work on them, with the nail for a chisel and an iron bolt from the rubbage in the lean-to for a hammer, and told him to work till the rest of his candle quit on him, and then he could go to bed and hide the grindstone under his straw tick and sleep on it. Then we helped him fix his chain back on the bed leg and was ready for bed ourselves. But Tom thought of something and says, "You got any spiders in here, Jim?" "No, sir. Thanks to goodness I ain't, Mars Tom." "All right, we'll get you some." "But bless you, honey, I don't want none. I's afeard of 'em. I'd just soon have rattlesnakes around." Tom thought a minute or two and says, "It's a good idea, and I reckon it's been done. It must have been done. It stands to reason." "Yes, it's a prime good idea. Where could you keep it?" "Keep what, Mars Tom?" "Why, a rattlesnake." "De goodness gracious alive, Mars Tom! Why, if dey was a rattlesnake to come in here, I'd take and bust right out through dat log wall, I would, wid my head." "Why, Jim, you wouldn't be afraid of it after a little. You could tame it." "Tame it?" "Yes, easy enough. Every animal is grateful for kindness and petting, and they wouldn't think of hurting a person that pets them. Any book will tell you that. You try, that's all I ask. Just try for 2 or 3 days. Why, you can get him so in a little while that he'll love you and sleep with you and won't stay away from you a minute, and will let you wrap him round your neck and put his head in your mouth." "Please, Mars Tom, don't talk so. I can't stand it. He'd let me shove his head in my mouth for a favor, hain't it? I lay he'd wait a powerful long time for I asked him, and more'n that, I don't want him to sleep with me." "Jim, don't act so foolish. A prisoner's got to have some kind of a dumb pet, and if a rattlesnake hain't ever been tried, why, there's more glory to be gained in your being the first to ever try it than any other way you could ever think of to save your life." "Why, Mars Tom, I don't want no sich glory. Snake take and bite Jim's chin off, den wise de glory. No, sir, I don't want no such doings." "Blame it, can't you try? I only want you to try. You needn't keep it up if it don't work." "But de trouble all done if de snake bite me while I's a-tryin' him. Mars Tom, I's willin' to tackle most anything at ain't onreasonable. But if you and Huck fetches a rattlesnake in here for me to tame, I's goin' to leave, dat's sure." "Well, then, let it go. Let it go. If you're so bullheaded about it, we can get you some garter snakes, and you can tie some buttons on their tails and let on they're rattlesnakes, and I reckon that'll have to do. I can stand dem, Mars Tom, but blame if I couldn't get along without 'em. I tell you dat, I never know before 'twas so much bother and trouble to be a prisoner. Well, it always is when it's done right. You got any rats around here? No, sir, I ain't seed none. Well, we'll get you some rats. Why, Mars Tom, I don't want no rats. Dey's de dad blamdest creatures to stirb a body and rustle round over him and bite his feet when he's trying to sleep I ever see. No, sir, gimme gyada snakes. Fi's got to have 'em, but don't gimme no rats. I ain't got no use for 'em, scasely. But, Jim, you got to have 'em. They all do. So don't make no more fuss about it. Prisoners ain't ever without rats. There ain't no instance of it. And they train them and pet them and learn them tricks. And they get to be as sociable as flies. But you got to play music to them. You got anything to play music on? I ain't got nothing but a coast comb and a piece of paper and a juice harp. But I reckon they wouldn't take no stock in a juice harp. Yes, they would. They don't care what kind of music 'tis. A juice harp's plenty enough for a rat. All animals like music. In a prison, they dote on it. Especially painful music. And you can't get no other kind out of a juice harp. It always interests them. They come out to see what's the matter with you. Yes, you're all right. You're fixed very well. You want to set on your bed nights before you go to sleep, and early in the mornings, and play your jew's harp. Play The Last Link is Broken. That's the thing that'll scoop a rat quicker than anything else. And when you've played about 2 minutes, you'll see all the rats, and the snakes, and spiders, and things begin to feel worried about you, and come. And they'll just fairly swarm over you, and have a noble good time. Yes, dey will, I reckon, Mars Tom. But what kind of time is Jim having? Blessed if I can see to pint. But I'll do it if I got to. I reckon I better keep the animals satisfied and not have no trouble in de house. Tom waited to think it over and see if there wasn't nothing else. And pretty soon he says, "Oh, there's one thing I forgot. Could you raise a flower here, do you reckon?" "I don't know, but maybe I could, Mars Tom. But it's tolerable dark in here, and I ain't got no use for a no flower nohow, and she'd be a powerful sight of trouble." "Well, you try it anyway. Some other prisoners has done it." "One of dem big cat-tail-looking mullein stalks would grow in here, Mars Tom, I reckon, but she wouldn't be worth half the trouble she'd cost." "Don't you believe it. We'll fetch you a little one, and you plant it in the corner over there and raise it. And don't call it mullein. Call it Picciola. That's its right name when it's in a prison. And you want to water it with your tears." "Why, I got plenty spring water, Mars Tom." "You don't want spring water. You want to water it with your tears. It's the way they always do." "Why, Mars Tom, I lay I can raise one of dem mullein stalks twice with spring water, whiles another man's a startin' one with tears." "That ain't the idea. You got to do it with tears." "She'll die on my hands, Mars Tom. She surely will, case I don't scarcely ever cry." So Tom was stumped, but he studied it over and then said Jim would have to worry along the best he could with an onion. He promised he would go to the nigger cabins and drop one private in Jim's coffee pot in the morning. Jim said he would just soon have tobacco in his coffee, and found so much fault with it, and with the work and bother of raising the mullein, and Jew's harping the rats, and petting and flattening up the snakes and spiders and things, on top of all the other work he had to do on pens and inscriptions and journals and things, which made it more trouble and worry and responsibility to be a prisoner than anything he ever undertook, that Tom most lost all patience with him, and said he was just loading down with more gaudier chances than a prisoner ever had in the world to make a name for himself, and yet he didn't know enough to appreciate them, and they was just about wasted on him. So Jim, he was sorry, and said he wouldn't behave so no more, and then me and Tom shoved for bed. End of chapter. Read by Lorraine Montgomery for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.